श्री भगवान उवाच ऊर्ध्वमूलमधःशाखम् अश्वत्थं प्राहुरव्ययम् छन्दांसि यस्य पर्णानि यस्तं वेद स वेदवित्। अश्वत्थम प्राहु अव्ययम्। दे कॉल द संसारा द अश्वत्थ ट्री द पीपल ट्री। यू पॉइंटेड आउट दैट फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल उपनिषद सेज दैट ऊर्ध्वमूल है वाक्शाखा एषो अश्वत्थ सनातन है। दैट कठोपनिषद सेज सेम थिंग। एंड महाभारत ऑल्सो डिस्क्राइब्स दिस ट्री, describing various parts of the tree. Avyaktamula prabhavah, the tree has its root in ignorance, which is also called avyakta or unmanifest. Tasseva anugrahottitah, and the tree also grows and becomes large also by ignorance. So it is born of ignorance, and the ignorance also includes the misconceptions, wrong notions. Ignorance along with wrong notions is the cause of the tree of samsara. It continues to grow also and expand because of that ignorance, because of these wrong notions. Buddhi skandhamayascheva. The Buddhi intellect is where the ignorance is, where all the notions are, where all the complexes are. That's a skandha. That's the very the trunk of the tree, right? Indriyantara kotaraha. The trees usually have also the holes in them, and the sense organs are compared to the various holes in this tree. Mahabhuta Vishakascha, it is all the branches of the five elements are the various branches of this tree. Vishahi Patravamstha, the sense objects are the leaves of this tree of samsara. Dharma Dharma Supushpascha, Dharma na Dharma, the virtue and vice are the beautiful flowers of this tree. Sukha dukkha phalodaya, the happiness and unhappiness are the fruits of this tree. So karma phala, phala is a fruit. And the various experiences give rise to various actions, result into the experiences of pleasure and pain. So dharma and adharma, they are said to be the flowers. Dharma means virtue, adharma means vice. Our actions can be divided into virtuous and vicious actions. Dharma and adharma, punya and papa. Dharma results into happiness, adharma results into unhappiness. This also is worth noting, by the way, that the scriptures explain to us that happiness is the result of virtuous actions. It is not the result of any object, although it looks to us as though the happiness comes when our desire is fulfilled, when we get and enjoy something that is desirable, then the happiness comes. But all of these happen when? Only when punya, punyodaya, only when there is fructification of the past punya, the virtue, that is when happiness comes. Then the setup happens, which creates happiness. It is a setup that creates happiness. Setup in terms of a desirable object, a certain favorable state of mind, the capacity to enjoy. See, a desirable object should be there, but then the capacity to enjoy also should be there. The food is desirable, but I must have appetite, my stomach must be all right, then only I can enjoy the food. So what creates this favorable conditions, which we call a setup, which creates happiness? Punya, that does it. So the simple equation is, if you want to be happy, and who doesn't want to be happy? Rather than worrying about the objects of happiness, acquiring objects which create happiness, thinking rather than that, just be engaged in good actions. By good actions is meant the selfless actions, niswarth karma, nishkama karma. The extent to which there is a nishkamatvam or selflessness in our life, to that extent happiness will automatically happen. To the extent that there is virtue in our life, values in our life, to the extent that a person lives a virtuous life, happiness will come. We need not chase the objects, we need not chase other things for the happiness. Happiness will chase us if we perform actions which we call are virtuous or punya karma. So, dharma, dharma supushpascha, this tree of samsara has flowers in the form of dharma and adharma, the virtue and vice. Sukha-dukha-phalo-sukha-dukha-phalo-daya, which gives us the fruits of sukha and dukha. Ajivya-sarabhutanam, this samsara is a livelihood of all the beings. Brahma-vrukshah-sanatanah, Brahma-vrukshah, presided over by Brahma, by Ishvara. Sanatana, it perpetuates forever. Etat brahmavanam chaiva. This is the tree of samsara in which Brahman or Ishvara or God, in fact, is the resort of the God. The Lord lives in this tree as a self of all. Brahma acharati nityashah. The Brahma dwells or Ishvara dwells in this tree. The idea is that even though this tree is a samsara, its root is in Brahman. Its essence is Ishvara. Whatever be the nature of universe, whatever be the nature of samsara, whatever be the nature of our life, the essence of everything is Ishvara. That's it. That is again a great consolation, great comforting thing, that it ultimately all resolves into Ishvara. It has emerged from Ishvara, it is sustained by Ishvara, it merges back into Ishvara. As the Upanishad says, yatova imani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivanti, yat prayanti abhisamvishanti, tad vijignyasasva tad brahmeti. That from which this universe is born, by which it is sustained, unto which it goes back and merges to become one, that is called Brahma. Just as it is a lump of clay from which all the parts emerge, by the clay all the parts are sustained. Under the clay all the parts go back. Isn't it so? So if the whole world of pots and pans, which you can call a tree of samsara, what is the essence? Essence is clay. That is the very essence itself from which the whole universe of pots and pans emerges. by which it is sustained until which it goes back. So, Ishvara or God, Brahman, is that from which this whole tree of samsara emerges, by which it is sustained until which it goes back. Meaning that just as the pots and pans are never away from clay, a pot can never be away from clay, it's the same thing with the same crack, you know, but it's still surviving. It can never run away from clay. It cannot exist without the clay. And so, just as the clay is the very Atma, the self of this pot, the essence of the pot, and so also Ishvara Brahman is the very self or the essence of this creation, which is most important. And it is for that purpose that this creation is described as tree. Lord Krishna says, Urdhamulam Adhashakam. Urdhamulam, with its root above, and branches below. Roots above, branches below. There cannot be a tree like that, with roots above and branches below. These days, of course, you have what kind of garden is? Arrow garden. I guess there the roots can be above or whatever. But then usually the tree, the roots are below and the branches are above. But this is a peculiar kind of a tree of samsara, where the roots are above and branches are below. However, the above and below are not to be taken in terms of space, not specially above and specially below. But above and below in terms of reality. In terms of its reality. See, for example, we use these words above and below in terms of the power that a person enjoys in a particular organization, for example. A CEO is called above. In India in particular, they use this kind of English, you know, from above, by order from above. It's typical Indian way of saying things. Above means by management, order of management, order of above. So this is an order that comes from above. That above may not be above in the physical sense. It is possible that the executive is sitting on the second floor and rest of the fellows sit on the third, fourth and tenth floor also. Still they will call it above, not in terms of space, in terms of the position. In terms of the power that they have. So, it is not unusual to use the words above and below, not only in the sense of the spatial sense, in sense of the power, in sense of reality. So, something which is a higher reality can be called above, and something which is a lower reality can be called below. In the rope snake example of the Vedantins, the rope is real. The snake is a projection, the rope can be said above, the snake can be called below, because the rope enjoys a reality which is higher than that of the snake. So that is what is meant, simply by saying urdhva moolam and adhashakam. We are told that this tree of samsara is below, meaning has a lower reality. Urdhva moolam, and the root has a higher reality, its source is in higher reality. And just say, the source of the universe is in Brahman, is in Ishvara, from which it is born, by which it is sustained, under which it goes back. So in this example of the pot and the clay also, clay can be called above and pot can be called below. Inasmuch as clay enjoys a reality that is a higher degree of reality than the pot. Because even if the pot breaks, the clay does not break. When the pot was not, the clay was. When the pot will not be, then the clay will be. Pot is only a very limited expression of clay. Clay has infinite potential of number of pots and pans. whereas pot has only limited potential. In every way, pot is limited in place, limited in time, limited in capacity. The clay is not limited in time, place or capacity with reference to a pot. Thus we can say that the clay enjoys a reality higher than that of the pot. So this is indicating a reality. The creation is there, no doubt, has a reality. Vedanta does not say that the creation is non-existent. It has a reality, which is called mithya. What is mithya? Mithya is that which does not have an independent reality. Like the pot is called mithya because pot does not have an independent reality. The reality of pot is rooted in clay. There cannot be a pot without the clay. There can be clay without the pot, but no pot without the clay. So also there cannot be universe without Ishvara. There can be Ishvara without the universe, but no universe without Ishvara. Ishvara enjoys absolute reality. Brahman enjoys absolute reality. The world enjoys relative reality. The real world of names and forms depends upon Brahman. This pot is, the pot shines, the pot is dear to me, the pot is asti, it is, bhati, it shines, priyam, it is dear to me. These are the five aspects of every object. The flower also is. The flower shines in my consciousness. The flower is dear to me. The flower is a name. The flower is a form. The pot also is a name. It is a form. It exists. It is. It shines. It is dear. And this is true of any object. A name and a form plus is, shines, and is dear. The clock is. The clock shines in my consciousness. The clock is dear to me. Is meaning asti. Shines meaning bhati. Dear means priyam. Asti, bhati, priyam. Or sat, chit, ananda. Asti means sat. Bhati means chit. Priyam means ananda. So asti, bhati, priyam. Or sat, chit, ananda. Is associated with every name and form. There cannot be a name and form without asti, bhati, priyam, without satchit ananda. So what is name and form? Is creation. What is asti, bhati, priyam? Is the root of the creation. Is the reality of the creation. Asti, bhati, priyam, satchit ananda is the reality of every name and form. When name and form is creation. So here also, in this object which is in my hand, there are two aspects. One is an aspect which is unchanging, other is an aspect which is changing. The pot is a name and a form, and that is subject to change. The pot falls from my hand, it breaks into shards or pieces, then it will have different name and different form. I don't want it to fall. Otherwise it will bring one more from India, you know. But the clay is the unchanging aspect. And the name and form is called the pot is the changing aspect. And so also in everything, that is name and form, the flower is name and form, which changes. Tomorrow it won't look the same. 15 days from now it won't look even what it looks tomorrow. And 1 hour ago it did not look like what it looks now, and so on. Asti, bhati, priyam is the unchanging, changeless substratum, changeless basis. So you can say the whole universe of names and forms emerges from asti, bhati, priyam, or satyam, jnanam, anantam, brahma, from Brahman, which is satchit ananda, existence, awareness, happiness. Urdhva mulam adhashakam. So in that sense we can say that asti bhati priyam enjoys a reality which is greater than the reality of name and form. Because even when the name and form does not exist, asti bhajib exists. The existence of the flower depends upon asti. The shining of the flower depends upon bhati. The joy that the flower gives depends upon the priyam. The flower displays an existence because of asti. The flower shines in my consciousness because of bhati. The flower is an object dear to me or a source of joy because of priyam. Asti bhati priyam, which is the nature of flower or the atma of flower or the essence of flower, is because of what the flower is. Therefore, Brahman is called urdhvam, upari vartamanam. It is existing above, not above in sense of space, above in sense of reality. Adashakam, all the branches. We are all branches. The branches beginning from Brahma, all the way up to a blade of grass, all these are different branches, different embodiments. So this is how the creation is. From higher to the lower. From one to many. Brahman is one without a second. The universe is many. From unity to the variety. From one to the many. From the real to the unreal. That is how Vedanta explains creation. No real creation. It's a projection. Just as a snake is a projection on the rope, so also the names and forms are a projection upon the asti, bhati, priyam. Name and form is mithya, asti, bhati, priyam is satyam. So creation is from satyam to mithya, from higher reality to lower reality. Mithya is real reality, satyam is the absolute reality. Urdhvamulam adashakam. Ashvattham. Why is this samsara compared to the tree? There is a purpose. See, in case of the tree, we can see the tree, but we cannot see the roots. You know, the roots of the tree are avyakta and manifest, not perceptible to the senses. The tree is perceptible to the senses. We can see it, we can feel it, we can touch it, we can smell it, we can do everything with it. Meaning tree is available for perception by all the five organs of perception. Tree is called vyakta, is called manifest. What is meant by manifest? Manifest is that which can be perceived by sense organs, is called manifest. So tree can be perceived by sense organs, it is manifest, avyakta. But from the tree we can infer the existence of the roots. The roots are not evident to us. Roots are not evident because roots cannot be perceived by the eyes, cannot be perceived by the senses. However, we know that the tree is standing, therefore there must be roots without which the tree cannot be standing. The roots are inferred. They are avyakta, they are unmanifest. So the whole universe is manifest, meaning that we experience it through our senses and through the mind. We can experience the universe of names and forms. But the root of the tree, what is it? Asti, bhati, priyam. That we cannot experience, that is not evident to senses. Therefore it's called root. What is root? Not evident to senses. Root which is unmanifest, not evident to senses. The rasti bhati priyam is not evident to senses. See, what you are experiencing is flower, but not asti bhati priyam. What you are experiencing, what you see with your eyes is what? The flower, its name and form. You cannot see with your eyes asti bhati priyam. You cannot see. You cannot experience. You know why? Asti, bhati, priyam can never be experienced, can never be seen, can never be perceived, can never be grasped. You know why? Because where is Astibhadi Priyam? Is it out there? No, where is it? It is my own nature. So one is perceiving it Astibhadi Priyam, understand? So perceiver cannot be perceived. It's the beauty of the thing, that who I am, the very self of the whole universe which I am watching. How can we, Swamiji? But then take the example of a dream. In the dream also we experience a universe like this. Where did the dream universe come from? It emerged from me, it is sustained by me, it goes back into me. Is it not so? When I went to sleep, I alone was, and then the whole dream world came about. So where did the dream world emerge from? Emerge from me. And how long the dream world is? As long as I am sleeping or dreaming, so long the dream world is. And where does it go? When I wake up, where does the dream world go? Suppose in the dream I am giving talking to you like this in the dream. And suppose I wake up from the dream, what happens to all of you? You're still waiting for me, for Swami to wake up, come back to dream? No, it wakes up along with me. It all merges back into me. The dream was not there when I was sleeping. Then the dream came into being, meaning that it emerged from, because there's nobody other than me there. It emerged from me. How long does the dream last? As long as I'm dreaming. And when I wake up, where does it go? It merges back into me. So who am I? I'm the self of the dream. I'm the Asti Bhati Priya of the dream. Is it not so? Although dream appears to be outside of me, it looks to be different from me when I'm dreaming, but really it is my own manifestation. Is it not so? That is why in the dream lecture I did not have to invite anybody. There was no need to build a hall. There's no such requirement there. Because I am the creator. It emerged from me, was sustained by me, went back into me. Who am I? I'm this very self of the dream. The dream is because I am. The dream shines because I shine. The existence of dream depends upon I. The shining of dream depends upon I. Who am I? Asti Bhati Priyam of the dream world. Does it make sense? I'm the self of the dream world. I have become the dream world. There, the speaker also is I am, and the listener also I am. I itself become split as both the speaker as well as listener. When I wake up, the speaker also wakes up, the listener also wakes up, everything wakes up. Dream is an example of the creation, how one becomes projected as many, how the real becomes projected as unreal. The dream is called a mithya unreal because dream does not enjoy an existence independent of I. Dream cannot exist if I am not around. If I wake up, dream cannot continue to be. Otherwise, can you imagine how many dreams will be around? How many dream worlds may be around? No. As soon as one wakes up, the dream world also gets folded up. Similarly also this universe I am experiencing. I am the experiencer. The universe is experienced. However, what's the nature of experiencer? I am also a name and form. And what is my nature? Asti, Bhati, Priyam. That Sat, Chit, Ananda is my nature. And therefore, who is the Atma? Who is the self of this flower? I am the self of the flower, and of the pot, and the clock, and name, and every name, and form. Urdhumulam adhashakam. The mulam, the root, the reality, the self is urdham, uparivartamanam, existing above, having absolute reality, unchanging reality, asti bhati priyam. All called Vastivadi Prem. By itself cannot project. It requires also the projecting power called Maya. So Vastivadi Prem Brahman along with Maya becomes the source of this creation. Udumulam Adasakam Ashvatam Rahuhu Avyayam. Thus Lord Krishna explains the reality of the universe basically by using these expressions. Urdhvamulam adashakam. Its root is absolutely real. The shaka, the branches are below, meaning that they are unreal, they are mithya. The universe is of name and form is a projection upon this very reality that is asti, bhati and priyam. That's the first line. Second line says, chandamsi yasya parnani. Chandamsi means the Vedas. Chandas means the Vedas. Chandamsi, the Vedas. The Rug Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. These are the Vedas. Chandamsi. So, they are the leaves, Paranani. Chandamsi, yasya Paranani. The Vedas are Paranani. Paranani means the leaves. The Vedas are the very leaves of the tree of samsara. The leaves provide the beauty of the tree, is it not so? The tree looks beautiful because of leaves. If leaves are not there, the tree doesn't look beautiful. I mean, as we generally define beauty, I should not say it doesn't look beautiful because it depends on how you define beauty. But generally speaking, the leaves provide the beauty to the tree, the very shape and form to the tree. These leaves also sustain the tree. They in fact initiate this process of drawing water from the roots, and then the water evaporated from the leaves. That's how the current of water, you know, is continuing in the tree. If you see with the big trees, the trees are big trunks. If you hold your ears at the trunk, you can actually hear the flow of water. That is by the way. You can hear the water is flowing. And who is responsible for that? The leaves are responsible for that. And so, the leaves are responsible for sustenance of the tree, for the beautification of the tree. And other thing that happens with that is, that whatever defects there are in the tree, they are all hidden by the leaves. The trees may have many holes and ugly looking things, and, you know, branches also sometimes are all twisted and turned, but with the leaves nothing shows up. That means the leaves are those which are also hiding all the defects in the tree. The leaves beautify the tree, the leaves sustain the tree, the leaves hide all the defects of the tree. Chandamsi, like our clothes, that's what they do. The clothes beautify the person, protect the person, hide all his defects. So human beings are very fond of clothes, the other living beings don't require any clothes because they don't care to hide anything. But we are very self-conscious. So not only we wear clothes to hide our defects, but we wear clothes to beautify ourselves also. That chandamsi is there from the root chad. Chad has its two meanings. One is to cover, other is to protect. So the leaves cover the defects of the tree and they protect the tree also by sustaining the life of the tree. Chandamsi yasya paranani. So what is Vedas here? Vedas means the karma kanda portion of the Vedas. Veda, as you know, has two sections. One is the sections dealing with rituals, other is section dealing with knowledge. The section dealing with knowledge is called Vedanta, which deals with Brahman. And so Vedas have two subject matters. Karma and Brahma. or dharma and brahma. The karmakanda section, there is a subject matter of karma, rituals, dharma, what are the duties and what are the righteous actions, the do's and don'ts. The karmakanda section is adesha. Is adesha. They in fact enjoin, do this and don't do that. Thus they give us the directions in our life. Because we are given a free will, therefore we also need the guidance as to how to properly use our free will, and that's what the Vedas do, by do's and don'ts. Just as a mother or father would do to a child, hey, don't do this. Come on, do this. Share it with your sister, come on. Don't snatch it away from her. So do's and don'ts. So Vedas also give do's and don'ts, and that way guide us in our life in performing the virtuous actions. So that is why the Karmakanda section of Veda is called Chandas of the Leaves, because the Vedas give us the knowledge of what is virtuous and what is vicious, how to do what is virtuous, which is helpful to us, and how to avoid the vicious, which is hurtful to us. So in fact, Vedas give us the knowledge of what is helpful and what is hurtful, so that we avoid what is hurtful and do what is helpful. Typically mother. That's why Vedas are called Shruti also. So mother Shruti. And that way Vedas also perpetuate, because they keep us performing actions. They guide us into performing actions. When you perform an action, then there is a result. When there is a result, there is raga-dvesha. There is another action, and that's how it goes on. So that way this karma perpetuates the tree of samsara. Chandam si yasya paranani. You know what this karmakanda section also does? It praises the results. It's called arthavada. They praise, like a salesman praises his products in order to entice you into buying that. Similarly, Vedas also praise the karma phala, the results of action. Look, if you do this, you go to heaven. If you do this, you get cattle. If you do this, you get name and fame. If you do this, you get progeny. If you do this, you get wealth. Anyway, I want those things. I want wealth and I want progeny and I want all these ways, cattle and various other things. And therefore, I'm tempted, I'm attracted, I perform those actions. So this Karmakanda section of Vedas, by praising or extolling the results of the karma, they in fact entice us in performing different actions. So when you perform the actions, the karma phala, the result comes. Result comes. Then I react to the result with what? Happiness or unhappiness. So raga dveshas are created, that's how the karmas are performed, that's how the samsara is perpetuated. So chandam si yasya paranani, the Vedas are the very leaves of this tree of samsara, which protect the samsara, which also hide the defects of samsara. They never tell you that all of this is causing bondage, you know, that they won't tell you. When a salesman comes to you, he only extols all the various good points of his product. He never tells you what the problems are. The doctors always prescribe the medication, all that, never tell you what the side effects are. That you have to discover yourself. Because if they told you what the side effects are, you may not even take the medication. But that you discover at your own cost, in course of time. So Vedas never tell you that the samsara is binding, that the karma is binding. They don't tell you. They only say that perform karma, perform virtuous actions, and you get all these great pleasure here and hereafter. So people are tempted, attracted, and they perform actions. Yastam veda sa veda vita. So one who knows the tree of samsara, he is a knower of Vedas. Because not only knowing tree of samsara, along with the roots you should know that. So the tree has, Veda has a total subject matter, is represented by the tree. The manifest tree is the subject of karmakanda, the unmanifest roots are the subject of jnanakanda. Karmakanda and jnanakanda. The section dealing with rituals, section dealing with knowledge. Karma and Brahma. So the manifest section represents karma. And the unmanifest roots, which is Brahman, represents Brahma. Yastam Veda, one who knows the tree along with the root, he really knows everything. So we should know the tree as mithya and the root as satyam. When you know that, then you know whatever is to be known in the life. Shankara says, sarvajnya bhavati. He becomes all-knowing, meaning he knows everything that is to be known in our life. Because what else is left to be known? You see, you can never know samsara in its entirety. You can never know how many leaves the tree has. You can never know how many grains of salt there, grains of sand there are, how many stars there are. That way you can never know the samsara. So how do you know this tree of samsara? Swami, when you know samsara means what? You know everything is samsara? You just know one simple thing, samsara is mithya, that's all you know. That's enough to know. After all, from the clay, so many pots and pans can be made, you can never know. Everything about even one pot you cannot know, really. There are so many aspects that a pot has. It has, I think, physics in there, chemistry also is in there. So many disciplines of knowledge are involved in every object. Then an object can keep all the scientists busy forever. That much is there. So when they say that one who knows the tree does not mean that you know all everything about the tree, you know one simple thing. What is it? The tree is mithya. And Brahma is satyam. Brahma satyam, jagan mithya. That Brahman is satyam and the tree of samsara is mithya. Then you know everything. This is how the Upanishads talk about knowing everything by knowing the one thing. Like in Mundoka Upanishad, the seeker approaches the master and asks this question. Kasmin bhago vijnate sarvindam vijnatam bhavaditi. Oh, revered sir, knowing which everything becomes known. Please tell me about that, knowing which everything becomes known. So human being wants to know everything, all right. But that pursuit of knowledge of knowing everything can never be fulfilled, not even a fraction or a fraction of a fraction can we know, because our intellect is extremely limited, and what we can know through intellect is extremely limited. One little aspect of the creation, that too not in its entirety. Every scientist is dwelling into now your specialty and subspecialty and sub-subspecialty. And still, you never know everything. When we are small and we are growing up, see, Germany was a big center of learning. So this fellow went to Germany and became specialist. Specialist of what? Specialist of left ear. He's not ENT, but then in ENT he specialized in left ear, you know. There also you can never know everything about left ear. You can never know. So that kind of pursuit of knowledge of the world is going to be futile, and it's endless pursuit. But the human being wants to know everything. So the Upanishad tells us, Vedanta tells you how to know everything. Just by knowing that, this is mithya. So the wise person is said to be all-knowing. Not that he knows everything, not that he knows all languages or anything. He just knows that. Brahma satyam, jagat mithya. Jagat is mithya, Brahma is satyam. And in order for us to know that, this creation is described as a tree. And the description of the tree is further given in the next verse also.
Adhaschordham prasutastasya shakha. Guna pravruddha vishaya pravala. Adasya mulanyanu santatani. कर्मानुबंधीनि मनुष्यलोके
अधश्च ऊर्ध्वं च प्रसृताः तस्य शाखाः शाखाद ब्रांचेस प्रसृताः दे आर ऑल स्प्रेड एवरीवेयर The branches of this tree are all spread out. Adaha means below, Udha meaning above, below and above. What is below and what is above is a relative thing, you know. Below relative to something, above relative to. There is no such thing as below, absolutely. It is with reference something that something is below. So we are below with reference to the ceiling. Ceiling is below with reference to the tree. The tree is below with reference of other building and so forth and so on. So below and above are relative terms. Therefore, so when the Lord uses expressions below and the branches are spread out below and above, with reference to human beings who is said to be in the center, sort of. The 14th chapter said, Urdham gacchandi sattvasthaha madhye tishthandi rajasaha Jaganya guna vrittisthaha adogacchandi tamasaha. Remember, we talked about the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. So a personality is made up of sattva, rajas and tamas. So what is it that we have to do during our lifetime? Is slowly transit from tamas to sattva, from sattva to from tamas to rajas, from rajas to sattva. This is called growth. We have to grow from tamas to rajas and rajas to sattva. Sattva means the tranquility, purity, tranquility, cheerfulness, all the great qualities of compassion, love, this is all sattva. So a person who is sattvic is a compassionate person, is a loving person, is a good person. For that person the goodness is natural, effortless. A sattvic person doesn't have to make an effort to be good, he is good by nature because sattva means goodness. And this is what we have to do, to all the time invoke the goodness from ourselves and try to suppress the evilness in ourselves because we are a combination of good and evil both. Evil being the product of ignorance, and since we are ignorant, therefore, the evil tendencies such as the anger and lust and greed, etc. are there. Same time, the noble tendencies of love and compassion also are there in us. Both these tendencies are there. In the 16th chapter, Lord Krishna called them the Devi Sampat and Asuri Sampat, the divine wealth and the demoniac wealth. So what should we be constantly doing? A constant homework is there, assignment is there. Not to be done only half an hour in the morning, constantly. What should we be doing? Whenever we find ourselves any tendency born of rajas or tamas, like desire for enjoyment is a product of rajas, and anger, etc., the product of tamas, raga is the product of rajas, dvesha is the product of tamas, attachment is product of rajas, aversion the product of tamas. So whenever we find these tendencies born of rajas or tamas, we should be constantly striving to subdue that tendency and replace a sattvic tendency. So when we find anger arise in ourselves, rather than regretting about the anger, as you see the anger rising in yourself, try to replace it by compassion. You're angry at a certain person, deliberately try to be compassionate to that person. Have sympathy for that person. Have pity upon, have mercy on that person. Have sympathy for that person. be compassionate to the person. This is how we transform the rajas or tamas into sattva. That's the thing we should be constantly doing. And that way, those people who have managed to gain a predominance in sattva, Lord Krishna says, urdvam gacchandi sattvasthaha. Those people who abide in sattva, they go above, meaning they gain the embodiments which are much superior to the human embodiments. They become devatas, etc. Madhye tishthanti rajasaha. The people in whom there is rajas, they are born as human beings. Jaganyagunavrittistaha adho gacchandi tamasaha. The people with tamas is predominant, they go to the lower embodiments, such as those of animals and birds, etc. So those are the lower embodiments. Yatha karma yatha shrutam. The next birth is obtained according to karma and shrutam. So whatever kind of actions you perform and whatever kind of intentions you entertain, so both the things have an effect, understand. Action as well as intention behind the action. Outwardly I may be smiling, all right. Inwardly I may be looking for an opportunity to pull your legs. Possible. With human being everything is possible. When a dog barks, it just barks. Not something outside and something else inside. But here we can have something outside and something else inside. So I may be smiling and I may, you know, and giving you the wrong impression. Internally I may have different intentions. So both of these things count. The action of smile also will give some benefit. But the evil intention, of course, will have its own result. Yatha karma, yatha shrutam. The kind of actions we have performed and kind of tendencies that we have entertained in our mind, all of these determine what the next embodiment will be, and this embodiment can be higher than human being or embodiment can be lower than human being. Manushya loke, this happens only to the human being. But Swamiji, about a dog, the poor dog doesn't do any karma. How can it ever rise above? How can the dog ever become free from being a dog? Because dog doesn't have free will. So dog does not perform any virtuous actions or whatever. So how will the dog become free? Dog doesn't have dog. The yoni or the embodiment of a dog is just meant to exhaust certain karma. When those karmas are exhausted, he gives up the dog embodiment and he takes another embodiment. He may go thus, he may tour a long tour he may have until he comes back to the human form. So whoever departs from the human body will tour different aspects of the world and come back to the human body again. Meaning that our tour or journey from one human embodiment to other human embodiment is already determined when you depart from here, and accordingly it's a conducted tour. Your karma conducts. Svakarma dutena javena nitaha. The karma conducts this whole yatra. So whatever is most predominant karma, they decide what the next embodiment is. So when they are exhausted, then what's the most predominant karma? They decide what the next embodiment. When they are exhausted, the most predominant karma. Like that, when we reach a certain combination which is suitable for human birth, then we come back to the human birth. Again, then we start counting 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, searching for the self. Again, perform karma. Again, dharma, adharma. Again, up and down. So this is how it goes on. Adaschozam prasutaha tasya shakaha. Shaka, the branches, are spreading out below and above, below the human being, above the human being, all the way to Brahma, and below all the way to blade of grass. Guna pravruddaha, vishaya pravalaha. They're all strengthened by the gunas. Understand that this embodiment is made up of the gunas. Three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. Our body is a product of tamas. Our organs of action and the prana is a product of rajas. Organs of perception and mind is a product of sattva. See, this is 15th chapter, you know. So supposedly all of these has been learned, you know, by the time we finish 14th chapter. Anyway, we are trying to repeat as much as we can. Some people get bored with what I am talking. Well, Swamiji, come on, proceed further. Some people may say, what are you talking about? So we have the whole blend of the students here. Some people very well versed. Some people not versed at all. And in between, you know, the whole variety is there naturally. So if you find me talking about some fundamental thing, then bear with me. If you already know, I'm sure most of you know most of these things. It will be a revision for them. And for those who are listening for the first time, it will be new information. Sattva, rajas and tamas. The whole creation is made up of sattva, rajas and tamas. Even in the world also, when you go to a place which is very peaceful, which is very tranquil, somebody says tranquility pervades. When you go to the mountains and rivers and places like that, tranquility is there, sattva. Some places are very active, rajas. Some places are very dull, tamas. So there's no movement, the dullness, tamas. You know, the mountains, etc., you know, all dull, tamas. Wind and water flowing, rajas. And sun shining, sattva. So sattva, rajas and tamas. Similarly, our personality also is made up of sattva, rajas and tamas. The gross body is very gross, made up of tamas. We have an active personality. We have organs of action. And we have the prana which provides the activity and the life. That is the rajas. And then we have also a tranquil personality. That is the sattva. Sattva, rajas, tamas. Guna pravruddha, strengthened by the three gunas. So each branch is an embodiment. In every embodiment, even a mosquito also, is made of sattva, rajas and tamas. Where sattva is we have to find, but then the rajas tamas is most predominant. Sattva is hidden very deep. In devata, sattva is more evident. In us, sattva is evident now and then. More of rajas. Human being is more of rajas. And the other embodiment, more of tamas. But the whole world, including all the embodiments, so every embodiment is like a branch of the tree of samsara. Each one of us is a branch of the tree of samsara. Countless branches are there. Countless living embodiments are there. Countless living beings are there. There also, if you want to count how many branches are there, at least 8.4 million, this is what we are told, 84 lakhs. They are the kind of embodiments. That's what our scriptures tell us. 8.4 million varieties of living beings are there, and we could be going anywhere. Some people think that, Swamiji, after human birth, you only get a human being birth. No, not necessary. I wish that was true, but no, that there is no license. Because human being is capable of acting like a human being, then he becomes human being. Human being is acting capable of acting like a god also. He can become a god. And he's also capable of acting like an animal. He can become an animal also. All these possibilities are there in us. And so, that's why you see, God had to make 84 lakhs of different, what kind of karmas we perform. And so different karmas require different embodiments, because what you can experience in human embodiment, you cannot experience elsewhere. You require a body of a dog to experience certain things, and so if the karmas are such that, so we'll have to go to that to experience those results. And so God has made 8.4 million different embodiments. So they are the branches of this tree of samsara, below and above. Guna pravruddha, Vishaya Pravalaha, the sense objects. So we have five organs of perception. The faculty of hearing, the faculty of touch, the faculty of sight, the faculty of taste, the faculty of smell. They are corresponding objects of the world. Shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha. Shabda, the sound, for which the organ of hearing is the faculty. So you perceive or experience sound through the organ of hearing. Touch through the organ of touch. Colors and forms through the organ of eyes. Taste and smell through the organ of taste and smell. So constant correspondence is going on. With the human being and the world, a constant interaction is going on. But because of ignorance, you know how that interaction is. Usually the sense objects always attract us. The sense objects usually attract us and create in us a desire to enjoy them. There were vishaya pravalaha. The vishayas, sense organs are like the new shoots. Because the sense organs and sense objects are constantly in touch with each other. And generally, sense organs are controlled by sense objects because sense objects create in us a desire to enjoy them. And that's how they compel you to do something to acquire those objects and enjoy them. And as it is, the sense organs are at the periphery of the body. And therefore also, the sense organs, sense objects are the shoots from which the new leaves come. Vishaya pravalaha adascha mulani anusantatani karmanubandhini manushya loke. Second line will take up in the next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadahya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Badarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah Ishvaro Guru Ratmevi Murti Veda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Rakshinamurtaye Namaha. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri.